Happy day. I'm Liza, your healing mentor. I used to say, all I need in life is for my kids to be happy and healthy. The problem is they weren't happy and they weren't healthy. Both my kids had anxiety, depression, and even Lyme disease. Then one day my daughter told her therapist, what would make me happy is if my mom was happy. So I went on a journey to find my own personal happiness. When I finally became happy, my kids accelerated in their own healing journey. Now I share my stories, my mindset, and inspirational mothers with you. Let's heal one story at a time. Happy day. Welcome to Very Happy Stories. I just love this next mother that I am going to share with you today. Her name is Caitlin Olthus, and she was in my mentoring support group. So just to give you a little bit of background, I do offer this mentoring support group to help moms who are in this journey. Lyme, PANS, neurodiversity, mental health challenges. We, the moms, can really lose ourselves in this process. And what my program does is I help you find yourself again. Actually build a new, more empowered you. I run everybody through modules. There are dynamic mindset shifts, and we do this in a group format. And so we're all there to support each other, not just on the days where we have a session, but throughout the week. So it's super cool. I will put a link in the show notes of how you can register for the next mentoring support group, which will take place January 9. It starts and it's going to be 4 weeks. And I thought we should just do it right after the holidays. So if this speaks to you, look into it. Link in the show notes and also on my website. But Caitlin is a graduate of the mentoring support group, and who she is today is completely different than who she was when she first started the group. So you're going to love her perspective. And we really talk a lot today about her daughter's treatment, OCD, what intrusive thoughts can look like in our kids with PANS. But we do talk about IVIG. It's a big buzzword when your child has PANS. If your child has PANS or PANDAS, you know you've heard of IVIG, but what is it? And actually, we make reference to this in the podcast, and I just need to say this because we were like, I don't remember what it stands for, immunoglobulin. It stands for intravenous immunoglobulin, and that is the treatment therapy for patients with antibody deficiencies. So maybe I'll snip a little paragraph and put that in the show notes too, so you can say these big words just like me. So before we get into this interview, though, real quick. If you are listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts and you're listening to the audio version of this, please subscribe. This helps people find Very Happy Stories. And you know, it's my mission to get the word out on these complex disorders because so many moms are going weeks, months, years of their child lacking treatment because they are undiagnosed or misdiagnosed. So please share this and subscribe. And if you're watching me on YouTube, which is all new to me, please subscribe also and share this with people that you know in your network. Have to admit, I am not the best with technology, but I'm learning. And I hope that captions come on this podcast. We'll see. It's all new to me. But you know what? I'm in the discomfort zone, and that's okay. All right, so let's get into Caitlin's story. This is Caitlin's Very Happy Story. Happy day. Welcome, Caitlin, to the podcast.
Thank you.
I'm so excited to have you on the podcast because you and I met through my mentoring support group. And oh my gosh, even in just a few short months, I feel like I know you and I feel like you have grown so much. So I'm so grateful that you're going to share your story with us today.
Thank you. I'm excited to share my story. I haven't really shared my story that much yet. So
yeah, I know. This is like the big, bold move, and I'm so proud of you. So just to give everybody some background, I offer a mentoring support group. Caitlin was one of the moms in it, and I always challenge them to be vulnerable and get comfortable in their discomfort and all this good stuff, getting over shame and getting over your fear of judgment. And this is like kind of like graduation day. So I am so excited that you're doing this. Why don't you tell us just a little bit more about yourself before you share your story?
Sure. I am an early childhood educator. So I've spent my career working with the little ones, infants, toddlers, preschoolers. I teach early childhood at a community college now. We live in Nebraska on a little farm. We have chickens and goats.
Aww.
Yeah. And I have two kiddos. Lisa is 8 and Leon is 2.
Great. Okay. I knew so much about your daughter's story that like we never even chatted about your son.
I know.
Tell us about your daughter, because this is your child that has the PANS or PANDAS diagnosis, correct? So tell us a little bit about her story and how you got there.
It started a little over a year ago. It was probably August, maybe September, but I think August. It's hard to pinpoint. And she started to just have a really hard time. And she's always been a strong-willed kiddo and big emotions, big reactions, very assertive, just always kind of been anxious. And so it was like all of those things that she had just had always made her personality were like times 100 or even 1,000, I don't know. And she just turned into almost like a different kid. And I remember asking my husband, like I was like, what happened? Like, what is going on? She was just really struggling with what I thought was anxiety. I now know a lot of it was OCD too, but it looked like anxiety to me. And we started to have these really big meltdowns and rage and aggressive behaviors that we had never had before. And it was just it felt constant. She was still doing a really good job at school. She actually started a new school around that time and she was holding it together at school, but then it was all bubbling over at home.
Sure.
And I mean, this went on for 3 or 4 months before I knew anything about PANS. And I just kept thinking like, oh, well, we've had a lot of stress, right? With the pandemic, we moved during the pandemic. We sold our house. I moved in with my parents for a year and my husband moved to the farm to get everything ready. And so we kind of went back and forth like on the weekends. And that was obviously kind of stressful. The kids stayed with me at my parents' house. So there was a lot of back and forth and a lot of change. And then she switched schools.
So these are huge transitions.
Yes. We moved in the summer, like officially moved. And then, so she was going to be starting a new school. And so just lots of changes, lots of stress really going on. And so I just kept like chalking it up to that. Like she's having a hard time and she just, we just need to get through it. But it was like to the point where I'm like, this can't just be, stress or change or whatever. Like other kids go through lots of traumatic things or stressful things.
And you're also an early education
Yes.
teacher. So kind of what are more reasonable, appropriate childhood behaviors and milestones than maybe a person who's not in the field.
Right.
Did you go to the doctor? Like what was your plan when things became much more difficult?
Well, honestly, at first I thought it was my parenting, which sounds ridiculous now, but at the time, like I was being really hard on myself. So I was like trying to find parenting plans and, I was like scouring the internet and reading and reading and reading.
Sure.
And it was, like, nothing was working. Of course, nothing was working because it wasn't my lack of parenting.
Right.
And so it was November, actually during like Thanksgiving, I have that week off. And I came across a Facebook post in a parenting group, and it was like a mom had posted about her daughter needing help. And it sounded just like my daughter, like meltdowns. And so I was like looking in the comments for suggestions, and I came across a comment that said, "Have you heard of PANS PANDAS?"
Really?
Yeah. And so I was like, well, I've never heard of that. Let me go to Google. And I Googled it and I like read the first one and I went back and read the second article and the third. And I was just like started crying. And I just knew. Yeah. And it was late at night. Like everyone was sleeping. I woke my husband up. I was like, you have to read this. I know Lisa has this, like, it has to be this. And so after that, of course, we started with a pediatrician.
How'd that work out for you?
Yeah, not well. We had moved too. So we had to go to a new pediatrician. I really didn't want to go to our local rural health clinic just because I was like, well, at least a pediatrician might know something. But
I only bring this up because I think there are so many moms listening that have tried to talk to their pediatrician too. And I know I'm not the only mom that thinks it's my parenting, just like you, or that my kid has anxiety. Like, it's so easy to chalk it up to anxiety, but it's definitely something serious and medical that could be happening. So right. I'm so glad that you did stumble upon that Facebook post.
Yes, I will forever be grateful.
Yes, I agree. So where did you end up taking your daughter to get a diagnosis and or treatment?
Yeah, so we went to the pediatrician and she basically told me that pandas is rare. She admitted that she had never seen a kiddo with it or treated it, but she diagnosed her with anxiety and referred us to the behavioral health department for therapy in that office, which was a 3-month wait, which was very,
so defeating.
Yeah, because I'm like, is my kid supposed to suffer for 3 months? And she wasn't just experiencing anxiety. Once I realized like sensory issues were related, urinary frequency, like the list I think I saw had like 14 symptoms and she had 10 of them. So
the urinary frequency, my son had that too.
Yeah,
I had no idea that that was from inflammation in the brain. And talk to us a little bit about OCD. OCD was big in my house. I didn't know it. I thought my kids just had anxiety also, until the practitioners were asking me specific OCD questions like numbers and rituals, which I didn't know my kid had. And there's also intrusive thoughts. So tell us how Lisa's OCD presented at such a young age.
Yeah, I thought it was anxiety too. And I think the pediatrician didn't really connect that it was OCD, because as soon as we got with a knowledgeable doctor, they pointed it out right away. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize. So she, intrusive thoughts were a big one for her. And she would get a worry in her mind. And then she would have to come tell me or check with me. It was simple things like my hand touched the heater and then she thought the heater might burn the house down, or I did this and then I did this. And it was just little things that definitely wouldn't have actually caused any danger or anything like that. So that was one, that was like her main one, which was really exhausting for me because it all came to me. Or she'd be watching TV and she would think because she did something the same as someone on the TV that something bad was going to happen to her. So then she'd have to tell me that. So then I would reassure her and then it would help it go away for a minute or a few minutes or whatever it was.
Right. There's really no relief. There's no
right.
real
no.
relief.
Right. When we were out and about, she didn't feel right if she didn't read everything, like signs and posters and things. And so going anywhere was very overstimulating, like the grocery store, she'd be reading every label that we walked by. And she was 7, so she could read most of it. And she'd have to ask me what it meant. And then she wouldn't even ask me what it means necessarily. She'd just tell me that it was there, or if it was something confusing, then she'd ask me. And it was constant. I mean, if we were driving, it was billboards and signs. And
wow, it is. It's exhausting. I had never heard of a child presenting like that, but I can only imagine how much energy it takes, right, to be in those moments. And just inevitably, and this happened to me, and it sounds like it happened to you, you become your child's coping mechanism because it's so severe. So tell us, when did you actually then get a diagnosis? You go to this therapy, you have to wait 3 months. How did you get diagnosed?
So we didn't wait. We made the appointment for therapy, but I found a doctor and we got in the next week. So Nebraska doesn't have any PANS specialists. There was one and he was retiring and not taking new patients. But luckily, we live close to Kansas, and I found a doctor, and on her website, it said she's a psychiatrist, but she kind of treats pandas, kiddos on the side. And so I messaged her, and she's like, yes, I think I can help you. You know, call this number. We'll get you set up with a virtual appointment. You just have to be located in the state at the time of the appointment, which was no problem because we live so close. And so we got in with her, and I had emailed her kind of everything we were experiencing with all the examples, so I didn't have to go over it, you know, in front of my daughter.
Yeah.
And she talked to her for a little bit and was like, right away, textbook case of PANS, moderate severity. And yeah, I mean, in one visit, she didn't do any labs. She's like, I can tell from the symptoms that you're telling me and the drastic change that it's definitely PANS.
So from there, what was the treatment that Lisa received?
So we started with ibuprofen around the clock. We believed that her trigger was likely something viral that was long gone pretty much, just based on like her health history and lack of any other symptoms. And we had done some labs with the pediatrician that were all negative. So, I mean, we just did basic like strep and things like that. So we started ibuprofen around the clock. We did Benadryl at night, and we did see some improvement. It was slow, but it was there over, that was in December. So in January, so like, I guess a month or two, in January, I found a clinical trial for IVIG. So I filled out the paperwork to see if we would be eligible. And we went for a screening visit. The closest location was Arkansas.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah. So they flew us down there and we did the screening visit and she qualified.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. So all expenses paid.
I mean, for people that don't know what IVIG is, gosh, I don't know if off the top of my head, I can, it's like intravenous globulin, something.
Yeah, immuno.
Right. God. I'll have to put this in the show notes or something.
Yes.
But it is very difficult to receive. It's not something that they're just going to give out like an antibiotic. I mean, you have to really be in a serious situation to receive it. And it costs a fortune. It's difficult to get your insurance to pay for it. So for Lisa to be part of this study, that's amazing, Caitlin. That's a phenomenal find. That is like the superpower of a mom to find a clinical trial for which your child is approved to be in. That's amazing. Kudos to you.
Thank you. They had to be within their first 6 months of onset of symptoms to qualify. So as you know, lots of kiddos don't qualify then because
right,
it can take so long to get a diagnosis. Yeah. We were like very close to 6 months, but we were within the time frame. We were under a little bit of a time crunch just to get the screening visit. But once we had that, then we were good. And we had to go every 3 weeks to Arkansas it was until July. So from February to July.
How'd she do?
She was a trooper. It was really hard. Those first couple of visits, they flew us there and it was two planes each way because there is no direct flight, even though it's really only an 8-hour drive, but small airports from where we live to Little Rock. And so, yeah, she was a wreck the first couple of visits because her anxiety and her OCD was so bad. It was not as bad as it had been because she had been getting treatment for a month or two. But it was really hard. She had a lot of anxiety that first flight. I remember she was like, what if the plane goes down?
Sure.
You know, like looking around and everything was a danger to her. But she hung in there. So we got three rounds of IVIG. So two consecutive days each visit, she would get the treatment and then three rounds of placebo because, you know, it's a study. So yeah, so she had to really get six rounds total, but three of them were just placebo.
Have you ever thought, I'd love to have a podcast just like this one? Well, I can help. My name is Matt Kundel, and everyone at my company, the Sound Off Podcast Network, had a hand in making this show. Whether it was about the sound, the discoverability, or that you're just enjoying the show, we are all about the detail. If you think you have a podcast in you, reach out to me via email, matt@soundoff.network. or check out the website and become one of the great podcasts we work with at soundoff.network.
How did she react then after the IVIG was done? Did you see improvement? Was she the same? What was the response?
Yeah, we saw major improvement. So we figured out we did get the IVIG the first three treatments. We could tell by side effects because she did have some side effects, one that was less common, but we could tell, I mean, like she's not going to get vomiting and headache from a placebo. So, and then the last three treatments, no side effects, but by the last visit, so every time we went, we had to do a psychiatrist evaluation with a big, long OCD inventory, I guess, with like tons of questions about everything.
Sure. Because they want to see, are the intrusive thoughts diminishing? Is she still reading as many labels? Like
yes.
These, they're gauging. Yes, I totally understand.
Every visit. And by the last one, she had basically nothing to report anymore for her OCD.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And during that time, we couldn't get any other treatment. So we could not do ibuprofen during the study. We couldn't start therapy. So we were kind of, we put all of our eggs in that basket. But, you know, we had talked to our doctor, of course, and
sure,
IVIG can work, you know, more quickly and in a greater, I guess, way for some kids, especially if they don't have raging infections going
yeah.
on.
You do have to bring those infections down. That's what I've heard too. Wow. That is amazing. I never knew that. I never knew that part of your story when we were working together. So
you know, I consider her PAN symptoms in remission now after that, but we are working on some other things. We are exploring ADHD diagnosis for her and for myself, actually. So we're learning things. And so we're still dealing with some struggles.
Yeah.
You know, at
yeah.
home, and the healing is slow, even
yes.
though the OCD is pretty much gone, and you know, the rage and sensory things, and she's eating better again, but it's just a slow process.
But having the OCD calm down, you know, to me, it sounds like she was really in a flare. She was flaring. And it's really hard to address ADHD and therapy and all the other things you need to go through in healing when the OCD is flaring. So it's kind of like now you're at a point where you all can do the work, right?
Right.
That you need to
right.
continue to do. So through this journey, what was the hardest part and how did you get through it?
I think the hardest part was just her suffering. So immensely, nothing,
yes.
you know, nothing could in the suffering of the family too. Like it was just trauma every day. I mean, my nervous system was shot by the time I got to your support group, to be honest, because it was fight or flight. I mean, from, I guess, August or September until, you know, sometime in the summer when things really started. I mean, it slowly started to get better with treatment. And then with the IVIG, it wasn't instant, but it did, you know, it took some time, but it definitely, we were seeing a lot of improvement. But I mean, that's a long time to be in fight or flight every day. So, and then even when they start doing better, you're constantly waiting for that moment when it's going to happen again, or, you know, what's going to trigger something again. So the trauma and the suffering and of the whole family, it was really hard on my son. I mean, because it's hard when your sibling, you know, has aggression and rage and can't, I mean, we did a lot of like separating. One of us would take him, one of us would stay with her, you know, get to a safe place, basically.
Yeah, I don't think people realize that like what's really happening inside the home is very scary. And it is traumatizing because truly, your child is being hijacked right before your eyes to see the immense suffering. And it's very scary for us to watch. It's scary for our husbands to watch. It's scary for the siblings. I mean, it's a very traumatic situation. So yeah, that's kind of like where I feel like my services to the community is to, we got to heal these emotional pieces and these wounds. And everybody does need to do work to start to feel safe again so that we can all move on.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. What surprised you the most about this journey and this ordeal that you have all been through?
I guess lately I've been working on myself a lot and that self-care piece and just trying to find me again after all of that. And so I think, I don't know, what's been surprising for me lately anyway is just that like I feel totally duped by society and all of the expectations. And I always thought I had this really great mindset and this really healthy outlook on life. And I was totally wrong because when life got really hard, it all went out the window. I couldn't manage it anymore, you know, became super isolated, super negative, very unhealthy, you know, just
yeah,
the mindset piece.
Well, because you're like, this is not what I signed up for when I had a child. Like that is the dupe. Like people are like, this cannot even be real. Like what I'm living cannot even be real. So how did you pull yourself out of that? Because that's not the person you are today. Like the person that I'm talking to on the screen is a completely different person than the pessimistic and super traumatized person. What changed?
Yeah. So I felt like I went into motherhood, like super positive and, you know, this is going to be great and this is going to be amazing. And I'm going to be a great mom because I'm a teacher and I know all the things about child development. And then, you know, just life got hard and then PANS hit and I was already kind of out of juice already before PANS came just from motherhood and all the expectations that we have on us moms. So yeah, got into that really dark place because I couldn't keep up that facade anymore that everything was fine and we're all doing great. And
it's exhausting.
And survival mode too. Like just, I can't maintain relationships with anyone because I have to give all my energy to home pretty much just to get through the day or the minute right. or whatever. It was your support group. Definitely. That was kind of the catalyst for that change. But I've been meditating and doing yoga.
I love that.
Yeah, the last couple of weeks. And I'm like, after you taught us about sitting in our discomfort and being neutral. And I was like, that really changed my perspective, I guess. And so I started the meditation and yoga and just connecting with myself and realizing that my mindset has been wrong all along. And I've just been squashing everything inside and holding it down and pretending like everything was great. And being strong and strong.
Yeah, strong. I know.
Strong, right. And that's not, you can't keep that up.
No, you can't. It is. It burns you out. And I just feel like it's not a good use of our energy. And a better use of our energy is just the things you talked about, like being neutral, sitting in our discomfort, riding these waves, feeling it all. And then kind of like riding that wave and letting it go, reminding yourself that I'm safe. That is like a lot of energy, but so worth the investment. And when I started implementing these things, I saw a big shift in my kids. Did you see a shift in Lisa or in your son or in your family dynamic at all?
Yeah, we're still working on it.
For sure.
I definitely see a shift in myself and how I'm handling things. And I realize I have been trying to like curate this perfect life with the least amount of triggers as possible for my kids, because whatever triggers them then triggers me because yes. It's so uncomfortable. And I see it in my daughter. Like I see I've already taught her some unhealthy coping mechanisms. Like there's definitely some codependence going on between the two of us. And so I've been practicing with my son. Actually, it's a little bit easier with a 2-year-old because 2-year-old behaviors for me, at least, are less triggering because I'm an early childhood person. So I know that he's just overwhelmed with emotions and, you know, it's a little less triggering than an 8-year-old maybe yelling at you or talking right. back to you when your 2-year-old's just upset and crying or throwing themselves down. So I've been practicing with him and I realized like, I definitely was not sitting in discomfort at all. And I wasn't letting my kids either. I was either trying to fix it or I was walking away because I was triggered. And so just being there for them and just trying to stay as neutral as possible. And like, I don't have to fix it. I mean, I can offer strategies if he needs to calm down, but yeah, just being there.
It's so true. our natural instinct is to fix it, right? But it is a disservice to our kids, especially when they have these heightened states of crisis. So yeah, I've been there. It's hard. It's a practice. That's why I call it a practice. Like, yeah, I have to practice it every day myself, but I mean, little by little, you do start to see shifts. And I have to say, the person I see today talking to you now, I mean, I have seen a big shift just in like your light and your presence. It's amazing. What advice would you give to the moms that are at the beginning of the process or might not even have a diagnosis and they're kind of in that foggy fight or flight daily life of survival? What piece of advice would you give them?
I think just to make sure that they're taking care of themselves, even if it's, you know, a 5-minute meditation before bed or, you know, 5 minutes early in the morning, because I totally lost myself during PANS. I kept thinking like self-care, haha, that's like a nice idea, but I can't manage that. But I just became so isolated and so like stuck in my negative, pessimistic mind, you know, my own harsh thoughts of criticizing like myself and, you know, just the victim mindset of why is this happening to me? And why does everyone else have it easier? And why does life have to be so hard? And
right.
And I just wasn't taking care of me at all. And I know it would have been hard to during that time, but even if it's 5 minutes to just check in with yourself and let yourself feel what you're feeling or breathe something.
Yes. And we really all do have 5 minutes. Even when I think back to those really hard days, you know, you could even give yourself 10 minutes.
Right. I think I could have given myself a little, yeah, even more than 5 minutes, but
right.
5 minutes would have been something.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think you're right. It sounds ridiculous when I put myself back in those shoes of like those darkest days, but it's almost like you do really owe it to your children to take care of yourself because they're counting on you to help them heal. And you can't do that if you don't take care of yourself.
Yeah. If you're just obsessed with, you know, treatment and finding solutions or diagnosis, like, I mean, you need to spend your time doing that, but you have to take care of you too.
Absolutely. Caitlin, thank you so much for sharing your story, for being on the podcast. I am so grateful to know you, and I can't thank you enough for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you felt inspired, please submit a review. More reviews help others find Very Happy Stories. And don't forget to subscribe and share this with someone else you know who could use a very happy story right about now. Until next time, have a happy day.
Said that the more time you have to invest, the greater the return. Well, guess what? Kids have the most time if we learn to invest early. That's why I created the Cash Kid Podcast, where I teach kids and some adults financial skills they need to know on how to earn, save, and invest their money. Join me on this journey as we interview experts and explore topics that allow you to grow your money as kids. This podcast will help you become the money expert among your family and friends. Just remember, anyone can be a cash kid. You just have to learn how to become one. Get ready to grow your financial knowledge and your wallet with the Cash Kid Podcast.